She's been listening and she has been watching. Okay, we might as well take a 5-minute break whilst we're waiting for the registries. So if... Oh, no, they're... Okay, no, they're moving in.
So. Remote participation, Caitlin says, thank you, Michaeli.
Okay.
Turn down this mic just into the room.
Yeah, or the room.
To the room. Thank you. Okay.
That's good. I can hear it in the room. Yep. I can hear it in the room. I don't want to hear it in the room. Not in the room. Thanks. For the purposes of the transcript, this is Tuesday, November 19th.
Okay, so the registries are joining us now. There's some space up at the table.
1600 local time, November 19, Retiro C.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you could please take your seats. Please take your seats. The registry and registrar meeting is about to start. And Jeff Newman is now sporting a very disturbing-looking thing. Okay, then, everybody, we're starting now the registries with registrars. There still might be one or two spaces up at the table if you want to join. So this is being chaired jointly by myself and Mr. Keith Drazek. So welcome, registry people. As a first order of business, I suppose we should all take a moment to salute and thank Mr. Newman for his many years of service on the GNSO and elsewhere, and I believe he has announced his resignation from the GNSO this morning. Oh, sorry, as Chuck points out, you're not resigning from the GNSO, just the GNSO Council. I spoke too soon. Maybe we got a little bit ahead of ourselves. Yes, wishful thinking. Thank you, Jeff. At least you have a sense of humor about these things. So, Keith?
Hey, thanks very much, Michele, and thanks to all the registrars that are here for inviting us in. Always look forward to these opportunities to engage. Apologies for being late. We had to have a conversation at the end of our meeting today that ran a little bit long anyway about how we were going to handle Jeff's replacement, so that's still sort of TBD. Anyway, thank you. So I think we have an agenda, a joint agenda. I need to make sure we pull it up. But before we do that, I want to note that towards the end of our session this afternoon, which is scheduled to end at 5 o'clock, we actually have arranged for IBM and Deloitte to come in to talk to give a brief update on Trademark Clearinghouse. So that's an opportunity. If we finish our joint agenda early, we can get them in early. People, if you have to leave at 5, that's understandable. But if you could stick around a little bit after, then that would be great too. So does anybody have our agenda handy? Pull it up. Sorry. I'll pull it up if you give me a second.
Okay. I've just been asked to pull it up. Nobody bothered specifying what it was, so this could get quite interesting.
That would be the agenda. Thanks, Keith. My machine is locked.
So I know one of the topics, or I believe one of the topics on the agenda was registrar onboarding, the AROS project. I don't think we received an independent briefing on AROS. I don't know if there's anybody here that would like to give an update on any work that's been going on.
Well, we did get a demo of it earlier today. I don't know if anybody else wants to speak to AROS. Okay, Tom or Matt or somebody, Volker, Tom, Tom.
The registrars certainly are very enthusiastic about all of you registries signing on board to AROS. We know it's voluntary, but we're certainly interested in if any registry does not plan to use AROS. Could you raise your hand? So everyone is planning to use it?
I don't think they've seen it.
Okay. So obviously it creates huge efficiencies for registrars, which means it helps out you as well. So we would highly recommend that you come up to speed on it and start using it ASAP.
Volker and Matt?
Thanks, Volker. I guess I would ask the registry folks, is there anything that the registrar community and stakeholder group can do to encourage all registry operators to use the system? Because I think that's one of the things that we're, at least I personally am, that has me a little hesitant about AROS is I don't want to have to manage, this set of registries over here and another set over there. So how can we kind of work together to encourage all registry operators to use AROS? And I don't know if you guys have had a conversation about it in your stakeholder group meeting or not. Thanks.
Okay, you can reply, Jeff. We'll allow that.
Thanks. We don't even know how to use it. We've never been invited to use it. We haven't. It's great. You're encouraging us, but we don't.
So there's a lack of communication is what you're saying, basically.
Yes.
Okay, okay. Volker, and then Matt. Oh, no, sorry, Matt, you've already spoken.
Maybe just as a quick intro into Aros, from what we've seen today, it would really greatly improve the need for paperwork, the need for updates being processed. The current process, as the incumbent registries will be able to confirm, is that when a registrar has to change certain data, then certain documents have to be filled out, not in triplicate, but certainly in a lot of paper has to be made black, FedExed, faxed, or couriered to the registries. Each and every registry similar has to be informed of these updates, be it a company name change, a company incorporation change, change of the officers of the company. Anything important is currently paperwork. The Aros systems would eliminate that need. The registries would automatically all be updated of the new data by the registrar when the registrar updates his information with ICANN. This will probably also decrease the workload of registries when a registrar wants to update his data. Therefore, we see it as a great advantage because we will not, as a registrar, we will not have to fill out the same information again and again and again for hundreds of registries. In the future, that's a system that's simply not manageable anymore under the new GTLD regime. So I would strongly encourage registries to look at the system, inform themselves if they haven't been informed directly of what the advantages are to them, and I believe they are substantial, and implementing this as fast as possible.
I'm just going to go to James in 1 second. Just another point as well for the registries. The demo we got this afternoon, one of the things that they did point out is that, well, first off, the system is built on Salesforce, which some of you use. I know not all of you do, but some of you do. And they are talking about offering some form of API so that if you already have a system of some kind, you can, you know, link them together. And I'll echo everything that Volker said. James.
Yeah, just to respond to Jeff, I don't think anybody's trying to push a pig in a poke. We saw a demo. We were impressed. You should be demanding to see the demo as well. And, you know, our message to you guys, we're seeing this from our perspective, and we're liking it. You guys may see something that you may have some other feedback, but let's get that feedback incorporated so we can get this thing up and running as quickly as possible.
I was looking for someone from ICANN staff just to make sure that, you know, you guys had access to, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, thanks, Matt, sorry to jump in. I mean, I believe I remember seeing an email that came across asking if we as a registry stakeholder group wanted to see a demo this week, and I don't believe we took them up on it. So I think that's maybe the confusion, and I apologize if that wasn't made clear. It sounds like, we had a pretty busy schedule, so there was lots other going on, but it sounds like you've seen something that is actually meaningful and real in terms of a demo, and now's the time for us to ask to see the same thing so we can make a more informed evaluation. Paul?
Thanks, Keith. It's my understanding, talk to Krista, that the guy that demoed the thing for the registrars is going to be around, and there'll be a demo opportunity perhaps tomorrow or something. Let's just ask her. But to Keith's point, it was just, hey, our schedule is slammed. We weren't going to take another half hour, 45 out.
Yeah, thanks. How long was the demo and the conversation?
I think it was, oh, sorry. I think it was like 30 minutes. You know, I mean, it's... Even less.
I mean, the demo functionality, I mean, they can show you just either the registrar perspective or the registry's side of it, or both. And it's pretty intuitive from what we've seen. I mean, as long as you can read and know how to operate a keyboard, I mean, I think you'd be fine with it, really. You don't have to be technical.
Michele, can I get in
here, sure.
Please?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Tim.
Yes, Steve Allison did the demo here. He is also doing demos out in the lobby area. There's a schedule up there. Some part of the time it's being a demo of Aros. Other parts of the time it's a demo of one of the URS. And there's a couple other things. So you might want to check that out. you know, with the registries actually were the ones that initiated this whole process to develop this. So Roy Dykes was chairing the group. So I would hope that there was communication with you guys, but evidently there wasn't for at least for this meeting. So, but yeah, I if you don't, you're not going to have a meeting time to hear from him. He at least can one on one you can see the demo upstairs.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Volker, then Chuck, and before you go on, what was the name of the guy?
Yeah, Steve Allison. Also, he is willing to do like a remote participation demo. So we could arrange for a call and then Adobe Connect, and he can demo the whole thing that way if you'd like.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Appreciate that. Volker, then Chuck?
Maybe just one more add-on of information for registries that think that they, because they need a paper document, do not benefit from the system. What we learned when we had this demo given to us was that it can also only be used for contact management, and when paper contracts are required, they can be implemented into the system. So you have the paper contracts, but still can you make use of the contact information update features. So every registry that uses contracts in any form and uses the registrar data can use this. And this also applies for registrars and registries that have already signed their RAAs. Even when you have a contract already signed, you can plug that in and start managing the contacts through that system as well.
Okay, any other comments, questions on the AROS update? Chuck.
Thanks, Keith, and thanks everybody for the information. Tim addressed the issue I was going to raise, and the people that need to see the demo for us are not here. So the fact that it can be done remotely is very helpful. Now, one of those people has been involved in the group, so I think it's probably all going to go pretty well, but that's great.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. Any other comments, questions on registrar onboarding? Tim?
We have one remote question, which I did want to put in. The remote question comes from Rob Golding, and he wants to know whether registries are still going to insist on using faxes, as faxes and telex machines were removed from the UK about 10 years ago.
Oh, I just volunteered that Krista and I could coordinate with the registrars and the registries about one or more demos. So I'll take that back as an action item.
Great, thanks, Tim. And that's great, especially for those who aren't here. So very good. Okay, let's move on. Let me just run through the topics that I think we have on our agenda. Jennifer, I know you mentioned that PIC specs or the PIC DRP, PIC specs probably is one. Okay, and then the other items that I had, maybe we could just cross-check here. Discussion or update on IGO, INGO, PDP working group report and the recommendations, and that ties in directly with the pending motions before the council. I think those are a couple of the items.
So one of the items that was proposed to discuss is how do the registrars feel about the PICs that have been set forth, the proposed implementation of those. Jeff voiced our concerns to the board earlier today. We wanted to open up that topic for discussion.
So, yeah, I don't know how many of you were stuck around for our session with the board, but I brought it up saying that, yeah, okay, we have this letter from Steve to Heather, you know, saying, you know, we were like, thanks, this is great, good movement forward, but what is this? Is this the first step? Is this a first step? Is this the final rules? Explain to them, you know, how much work we have and wanted to know where this fit in into the schedule. Like, is it going to change from this format? And if it does, when would we know? And to give us some sort of certainty on that time frame. I don't know if, you know, how the registries feel. I mean, it just because looking at it, it says, you know, registries will enter into a contract with registrars and registrars will do it. There's also how is it going to be enforced? I don't think that was very clear. I think it would probably be good for this group to work together on figuring if we want to get it done quickly to figure out a way to try and implement it. But I don't know, those are just some of the suggestions. I don't know what, you know, if the registry stakeholder group have discussed it today, but I think I'd rather this group be proactive than having it put into our lap, or unless the way it's written is that's you know, the final piece, and then everyone gets to figure out how to implement it on their own, but I doubt that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, just following on from this, I mean, one of the key things that Jeff touched on during that session, and some of the board also agreed with us on, is that depending on how this PIC stuff kind of gets implemented, there's going to be quite a big burden on registrars in terms of implementing it, since we're the ones at the end of the chain. And, you know, the thing at the moment is, of course, a lot of us are talking to registries or prospective registries, and you know, it's like the goalposts are kind of moving. It's not simply a question of just signing on. It's like you could be signing on and then turn out that things are quite different further down the road. Jennifer?
So what I was proposing is perhaps we re-engage with one another and create, you know, monthly calls or bi-monthly calls to address issues such as this, so we can get in front of the issue sooner rather than later.
Thanks, Jennifer. I think from the registry's perspective, and I'll speak for the registry's XCOM, we would certainly welcome that, particularly as things start to ramp up in terms of our interaction and integration all around new GTLDs. Anybody else? Anybody else from the registries want to sort of chime in on the PIC specs?
Yes, it has been a bit of a concern for many registrars that in response to the requirement of PICs by ICANN to respond to government GAC concerns with regard to some of the TLDs, some registries have opted to offload all requirements on the registrars by including language in the PICs as a registry shall require a registrar to do X, Y, Z. That is a bit of a problem for us because that, again, offloads all the implementation requirements and requirements for possibly costly implementations on us, whereas the registries are kind of scot-free, getting out scot-free, and by making these requirements. This also opened the door for things that ICANN was not able to include in the RAA, i.e. creating new obligations for registrars that are not consensus policy, and I just would like to see a statement to that effect, how these burdens should be shared equally between registries and registrars.
Thanks, Volker. I think all of those concerns are very legitimate. So I think it's something that the registry should take back and think about. Obviously, we can't speak for the applicants, and each applicant's different. There are certain things in those PIC specs that were given to the registrars because they can only be done by registrars, things like entering into agreements with registrants that say A, B, C, and D. That can only be done by registrars, but the enforcement of some of those can be shared, and that's, I don't think we can speak on behalf of every registry. I know there are registries that are not offloading all of that, so, but it's a good topic for us to discuss as registries moving forward.
Hi. I guess we don't have roaming mics, so I'll roam 2-1. Hi, Jordan Buchanan with Charleston Road Registry, also known as Google, or subsidiary of Google. Volker, I want to understand a little bit better sort of the range of options that, I mean, maybe this is the implementation discussion that we need to have, but certainly I know in conversations we've had with many registrars, when we start to do things that involve the registry interacting directly with the registrant, you guys start to get a little nervous about that. So I think a lot of registries are probably passing the requirements down through the registrars because you guys often tell us, don't talk to our customer. So we need to figure out how to get that balance right, and I think that's probably part of an extended implementation discussion. I do think different registries are going to choose to do a lot of things different ways. There's registries, I'm sure, who are not on the GAC advice list that are going to do all sorts of annoying GAC-like things, right? And we'll have to figure out how to work through those as well. And I don't say annoying just to you guys, right? They're annoying to implement for the registry as well, but it may fit a business model that's, you know, intended to provide a credentialed space or to, you know, give some certainty about who registrants in or in some particular space. We're going to be trying out a lot of new business models, and I think it would be good to have ongoing dialogue on a lot of these implementation issues, but it's hard to imagine we're going to end up at a one-size-fits-all implementation scheme where every time there's some requirement on the registrant, it's always going to be implemented by one party or the other.
Thanks, Jordan. Thanks, Jeff. Any other comments, thoughts, feedback?
Just follow through on this.
Okay. So we'll follow through on this and try to coordinate another conversation around sort of implementation, a little bit more detail. We've got some more time. Jennifer, any next items on the agenda, or should we revert to my list?
Let's go with your list next, since okay. I was up last. It's your turn.
All right. We'll alternate. Very good. I think it's important before we run out of time to discuss motions before the council tomorrow. I know IGO, INGO is of particular interest. So why don't I just tee that up for Jonathan and our counselors and Chuck on IGO, INGO. And I think what we want to do is to give you at least an update on our conversations today and our thinking going into tomorrow, probably have a dialogue about that.
I'll try and be as brief as I can. This is a complicated issue based on a complicated piece of work, but I think there's been a revision to the motion. I hope you guys have seen the revision to the motion. Essentially, it breaks the motion down into three component parts. One is a recommendation to deal, which is in a sense nothing to do with the core work of the working group, but deals with the consensus levels in the working group. But one of the issues that the working group found is that what it chose to do was take the recommendations a working group makes can be based on various levels of consensus or varying levels of consensus can be established in a working group. This working group chose to make recommendations to the council based on two different levels of consensus. The registries have elected, we believe that the right way to deal with this, I think, is to, and I hope I'm reflecting this accurately, is to separate out the vote according to the two different levels of consensus reached by the working group. I'm oversimplifying it because there's lots of background in here as to why those different consensus levels were reached, who participated in the working group, and so on. But the net effect of all of that is there is a set of recommendations made by the working group to the council, and with a relatively complicated discussion, we've ended up at a position where we propose to vote on those in two different batches, if you like. The majority are those that received consensus support in the working group. That wasn't full consensus, but they received a consensus support. And then there is one recommendation of the working group, which in fact breaks down into three sub-recommendations, which received strong support but significant opposition status from the working group, and we propose to vote on that separately. I don't know if anyone else would like to add anything to that. Where we're at is we intend to vote in the affirmative for those that received the consensus level support, and there's some subtleties in the breakdown of the three sub-levels. If we currently, if they stand all together as one group, we would vote against them. But it's important to recognize that a couple of those recommendations, a couple of the sub-recommendations did receive registry support in the working group. So that makes it a little awkward for us to be voting against them. And if another group were to see those as worth separating out, we might change our position. But currently, we're not asking to ourselves to separate out those sub-recommendations. So it's complicated. We've all talked about it a lot. I hope I've represented that accurately here. I'm not sure how much you guys have talked about it or where you're at on your intentions to vote.
Thanks, Jonathan. So I think just to put a point on it, if the last three recommendations are not split, then we would vote no on all three because they would be together.
And in current formatting, for absolute clarity, that's 7ABC. So 7ABC, all received strong support but significant opposition. And as Keith said, we intend to vote against those if they are clustered. If for some reason there is a proposal from, I guess, another group to break up that clustering and vote for them separately, we may break up our vote. We would likely break up our vote and have support for one or more of those, but not all of them.
That's Michele. I think we've been discussing this a little bit in our own group. I mean, maybe a couple of the registrars have some opinions. I see Yoav waving his hands.
Yeah, just a clarifying question. So which one would you not support, or which ones you will support out of the three parts?
Okay, someone might need to help me here. So we will vote in the affirmative for recommendations 1 to 6, which received the consensus support. On 7, should it remain bundled, we will vote against it. Should it remain separated, which is your question, which is the one we will vote for and which is the vote ones we will vote against? Maybe someone can help me. Jeff or Chuck?
So Chuck can clarify, but I believe what we were in favor of, or okay with, I should say, is having the acronyms of the IGOs in the trademark clearinghouse, and we were okay with them being used for claims. We were not okay with them being used for Sunrise. So that's the three parts. One is, do we favor it in the clearinghouse? We'd be okay with that. Do we favor it for claims? Yes. Do we favor it for Sunrise? No.
Mason? And Chuck?
I just wanted to explain a little bit to the registrars about why this is important. This started with the Red Cross and the International Olympic Committee looking for a way to protect their names at both the top and second level so nobody would preemptively get those for delegation. And the GNSO undertook a PDP to get that done as a sort of a gesture of goodwill to these international organizations. It grew into something much bigger than that through a lot of procedural minutia that we don't really need to discuss. What the working group arrived at was consensus on protecting full names at the second level of certain organizations like the Red Cross and the IOC. What there's no consensus on is protecting acronyms that were submitted to the working group by the GAC, and it was a very extensive list. And some of those names are usable by a wide variety of registrar customers. So, for example, ISA, that stands for the International Seabed Authority. The GAC wanted that to be protected. Well, okay, you can understand their position, but ISA.whatever could be a very valuable name for registrar customers. So that's the reasoning behind where we are on that level of consensus.
Yeah, and then just to add to that, so if you break down 7, A, B, and C, you could take ISA. Let's work with that example. So ISA could be added to the clearinghouse, have a claims notice against it, but not be eligible for Sunrise. And that's where we're at. That's where we believe we could at least live with. So pulling out the Sunrise. But so the question is, where do you stand? And if you know at this point,
yeah, we're in lockstep with registries on the voting. I think Volker wants to speak there.
Yes, the entire topic has a bit of a longer history in the registrar's constituency. We've been discussing this since the first proposals came out with the special protections for the ROC and the IRC and the Red Cross, and we were very resistant and hesitant to grant any exemptions, and only after we were promised by the GAC in a certain language that this would be the end of it, did we agree to granting some certain exemptions? This was a very contentious topic at the time, and I'm not aware that the general feeling in the registrar's constituency has changed. So granting claims notices for abbreviations is still a very, very contentious topic, and we have not, to my knowledge, made any decision of how to vote on that.
I've got one query from Luke on remote participation. The question is it even possible to have a trademark clearinghouse label that can only be used for claims and not registrations during sunrise?
The answer is yes. I mean, the trademark clearinghouse is specifically set up to deal with those two categories of application. I mean, it may require some form of modification, but the fundamentals of the clearinghouse are set up in that way. I should say that there's one other point I should make, that we went through quite a lot of discussion, and I don't want to reopen that discussion, but there was a principal point here as well, is should a recommendation from the working group be voted against by the council or not? And we talked about that quite a lot, or should it simply be referred back to the working group if it wasn't satisfactory? There are some nuances in this case, and we've spent quite a lot of time discussing it. I don't think we need to go into that now, but it's worth reflecting that was part of our discussion. Nevertheless, the position remains. We propose to vote yes for 1-6, no for 7 if it remains bundled, and potentially if it becomes unbundled by whatever means to split out our position on that, to vote yes for inclusion in the clearinghouse, yes for claims, but no for sunrise. So we're absolutely with you on no for sunrise, no matter what. The only question is whether we accept acronyms going into the clearinghouse and acronyms therefore getting claims notices associated with them.
Just one thing I wanted to clear up, and I guess it's the response to Luke's question online about marks in the clearinghouse only subject to claims. And if you look at the TM plus 50, the plus 50 is not available for sunrise and for registration. It's just for claims. So that mechanism is already built in and is available. So.
Okay, thanks. I mean, you have to do... No, okay. I gather the impression I get from the registrars is that most of us don't seem to be too happy with this acronym thing, or maybe I'm misinterpreting it. But I think that's the general kind of feeling. Yoav, did you want to add something?
Just a suggestion. Maybe we can hear from people here what they think from the registrars, kind of, because we've had some discussion on the XCOM, but you know, hear some others what they think about this.
Okay. What was the other item on the agenda?
Are there any other motions that need to be discussed?
There's one other.
What's the other one?
Yeah, I guess the other one is the translation and transliteration of the contact information. I think you have this is actually your motion, right? You would like to... Right.
Yes, yeah, so... this came to the council two meetings ago, and two calls ago, actually, to be precise. We asked for a deferral because there were some problems, as we saw it in the charter. We then, in the next council meeting, there was a coordination between us and Jonathan, who made it first, withdrew it. We had a quick discussion on different points that I raised and also Volker raised. Ching also supported some of them. Just to clarify, the translation and transliteration of the WHO's data can be a huge problem if we don't do it right. And I mean both for registrars and both for the registries. Nothing. I think it's much more than anything we've seen, like in the IDNs or something like that. This is much more complicated. And so, what we were asking is to add more text to the charter that will actually make sure that the PDP is covering different aspects of that issue, and we'll bring concrete answers or recommendations actually to the council. It was added in our call of the working group, and looks like we are all in the registrar, XCOM, we talked about it, we're all in consensus about it. Registrars are well, so should go through.
So, but this is just a vote on the actual charter. I mean, the PDP itself is going to go ahead anyway.
Right. We're voting for it. We just now it's amended finally, and it will be with the right things inside, because before that it was lacking of a lot of points that it should cover to make sure that they're not forgetting. Like, what will be the cost for implementing that? And who should pay that? Would it be a registrar paying for translation and translation?
Okay. I mean, this look, obviously the horse has already bolted on this one anyway. Volker.
Maybe just to clarify, by pushing this back to the working group and having a very quick turnaround and discussion in the working group that caused the motion to be resubmitted to the council within less than a week, I believe, we were able to insert some language also that required or recommended to the working group to also engage in a weighing of the benefits versus the potential costs, as in a nice to have benefit versus a significant cost for multiple operators might not be worthwhile pursuing. That had been missing before, and I think this evaluation makes the motion that much stronger and beneficial to our interests, and also better policy. The result will be better policy, I think.
Okay, thanks, Volker. Just going back to the AROS discussion we were having earlier, Tim Cole sent on some information about the demos. They are scheduled at the top of the escalator across from the ICANN Newcomers Lounge from 3:30 to 5 p.m. today and tomorrow, and from 11 until 12:30 on Thursday. So both registries and registrars are encouraged to go along and have a look at this wonderful tool that will make our lives significantly easier and save registrars from developing writer's cramp.
And Michele, it's... It's just based on if you show up and want to see it. He's not going to be standing there doing demos over and over unless people come up and want to see it. So it's really going to be hands-on demo.
Okay. So, Michele, if you send that to me, I'll forward it to the registries list and the applicant list. So did we finish on the motion you guys were just discussing? Okay, then I think we need to just circle back briefly. Jeff asked the question about IGO. INGO is what do the registrars plan to do in terms of voting on this motion? If you know at this point.
Maybe we need a little more discussion?
You know.
We didn't hear anyone else, so.
Well, I mean, I think I already gave my opinion on this, I think.
I think the same, but I'm waiting for others to speak.
Well, I mean, I think I said that I was opposed to adding anything for the acronyms, either into the Trademark Clearinghouse or anywhere.
So there's like 20-something recommendations in the entire motion?
We're talking about if the motion is split so that the bit about the acronyms can be voted on separately, because that's the part of the motion that had, was it strong support but not consensus, or strong, was it...
Let me help you, Michele, if I may. As far as I'm aware, what I think I've heard here is you are with us on items 1 to 6 of the motion. We're all okay on that. We will vote together and in the affirmative.
Yeah,
on that.
It's all about item seven, which is
A, B, and C on acronyms. We currently will vote no if the motion, if that item seven remains bundled. You guys, I expect, will vote no as well if it's bundled. The question is, if it gets broken up for whatever reason, our intention is then to vote yes on two of those, and acronyms could well end up in the clearinghouse, and we might end up voting differently with you. So the question is, I guess what we wouldn't mind is how strongly you would feel about us diverging at that point, because, you know, we obviously work with you. we aren't always in absolute lockstep with you, but at the same time we're sensitive to our relationships with you, and we don't want to blow it unnecessarily by going against something you feel very, very strongly about.
So diplomatically, you're asking, are we going to stab you later? I mean, look, I don't know. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the I would certainly be opposed to even allowing the IGOs to have protection of claims. It just seems like a huge...
You mean acronyms?
Yeah, the acronyms. They're not trademarks. You know, so unless they are trademarks, they're eligible for the clearinghouse anyway. But now you're having the folks in front of the clearinghouse having to make judgments beyond trademark rights, and that's not what it was designed for.
James, Yoav, Ben, Jeff, Mr. Berryhill.
I was actually going to defer to, was it Jeff that was next? Whoever's next in the queue.
Just one of you to go first, please. Thanks.
Yeah, I just kind of want to pick up where Tom was. The claims notice has a prescribed form and format. It says, you know, there is an intellectual property claim. I don't even understand if you're going to say, well, we're going to have a claims notice that, you know, there's some IGO that really likes this acronym. And the only way to do that in a standard format is to say, you know, it's either a trademark claim or some piece of fluff that you don't know about. I mean, it puts me on, as a registrant, it puts me on notice of what. There's
John,
no dispute policy.
Just clarify that.
Let me finish. The point with the claims notice is that there are dispute policies that follow on. All right, and what we didn't want to have was a situation where under a UDRP or a URS, somebody would have a trademark registered and would be able to come in, because those require active malfeasance, would be able to come in and say, oh, I had no notice of this, all right? But here you're providing, that's the point. That's the point of providing the claims notice, is to eliminate a defense in a dispute policy that applies to the registration. Now, What is the point of the notice here? What does it do for anyone? Or are we then going to have some follow-on thing to some dispute policy? It is a pointless thing to do, and it dilutes the value of the express notice of potential trademark violations that we wanted to include in the first place. I don't understand the point, other than giving the trademark clearinghouse something else to charge people for.
Can I just check one other point of fact? What is the trade? Does anyone know what the trademark claims notice looks like for a abused label?
Well, look, there's actually people from the trademark clearinghouse sitting at the back of the room staring at us, so maybe they can answer that. Vicky, I'm looking at you. And I think she's either ignoring us or looking for that. Okay, I'll let them scurry around the back and see if they can find us one. Ben?
Go on, Jeff.
Go.
So we're in a little bit of a dilemma here, because the working group is now at their final report. They've delivered their final report. And a lot of these points are very valid. I don't disagree with any of them. The problem we have here is that those points weren't expressed by the registrars in the working group. In fact, the registrars, I mean, they were before the initial report, but the registrars, and again, I don't mean this to sound blaming, but there was no one there from the registrars to actually change the position of the working group. There was no one there to make the arguments that John has made very well. And so now we're in a position, basically, of it gets to the council level after it's all done, and we're in a position of basically shooting down a lot of the report. So I agree with you on the notion of, with the acronyms, with the IGOs, because that's an area we've separated out and we can vote that down. But there's other areas of the report that talk about trademark claims for different things that I would agree with you, John. It's the same logic would apply. But so we're kind of in a little dilemma here, right? Because we want to preserve the policy development process, and we don't want to second guess what the working group did. We can, however, vote down the one area where we have objected to, and that's what we're recommending. And where the recommendation wasn't a consensus, but as Keith pointed out, it was strong support but significant opposition.
So, yeah, James, go ahead.
Well, wasn't there another option where we would, where the council would defer on some of those and send it back to the working group for?
Yes, there was an option, but we discussed it in the registry stakeholder group, and we're not going to defer it just to vote it down later.
No, not defer. I'm sorry, not defer, but essentially say we're accepting these recommendations. These recommendations have prompted additional questions that were not addressed in the working group, and we'd like some refinement.
So that's an option, but when we discussed it within the registries, we didn't see a point of sending it. There's no questions. We don't agree with it. So it's not like the working group's going to work that out.
Then you've got to vote no. I mean, I know
right,
it feels like a GAC thing to do, but...
Right, so we're going to vote on that one part, but the points raised by Tom and John are actually broader and are included in other recommendations, which we're saying to vote yes to.
I'm with John on this one. I mean, inclusion into the clearinghouse should be on the basis that those terms meet the requirements for inclusion in the clearinghouse anyway. You can't create a special subset in this instance.
For the acronyms?
Yeah.
So just so you know, the ones that we're saying yes to, and you guys said you would vote along with us, we are creating that class for the IOC, the Red Cross, full names of the IGOs, right? Not the acronyms. So we're doing that.
Hey, Jeff, so
I saw a hand from Yoav, and then Barry Cobb wanted to jump in from staff, and then Tom. Yoav,
yes.
Go ahead, then Barry, then Tom.
Jeff, I think you're hearing here from the registrars that I think the problem that we have is that we're opening a door. And we've already talked about this thing long ago when this whole process started, that we're opening a door for something that we were promised that will end at some point. It doesn't seem that it's ending. And this is clearly an issue for many of the registrars. The fact that we didn't have anyone participating is not a good functioning of our stakeholder group. But that doesn't mean that we should go now and vote for it when we're against it. And us as counselors of and that represent this working group, if the entire working group, the stakeholder group, if the stakeholder group is against it, how can we go and vote in favor? So, you know, I think it would be great if this... if this was split to that we can actually don't vote down everything and only the acronym part. But I think this is what we're hearing here.
Okay, thanks, Yoav. I saw Jonathan wanted to respond to something you said, and then we'll go to Barry and Tom.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure where we are, because at the moment we've split it up into this 1 to 6 and 7. I think if we were to go back now and essentially... Well, I think we've got to be very careful about the integrity of the process, and I mean, we've got a higher level sensitivity here of having had some work of a working group in one of the most highly visible and sensitive areas, much as all of us may not like the genesis, the progress, but we are where we are. There are a set of recommendations from the working group. So from my point of view, you know, thinking from a GNSO council, GNSO policy development point of view, I'd happily accept some compromises around number 7 for the sake of the perceived integrity of the overall process. So if you guys felt you could live with voting in the affirmative for 1 to 6, I mean, my sense is let's keep 7 bundled and let's, you know, vote it down.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. So Barry, then Tom, then Jordan, and then John.
Thank you, Keith. This is Barry Cobb. I'm not sure if this will help the deliberations or not, but
in terms of the implementation for this going forward and the use of the trademark clearinghouse. There was feedback from the community that the claims notice itself, you're right, is very trademark intensive or tailored towards that. That it likely, in terms of implementation, that it would be tailored more for language of protecting an IGO identifier, so it would be two different notices, and I'm sure that opens up some other doors. But ultimately, it's something that would be looked at in the implementation component, and I think there's one clause, or one of the last clauses in the resolve statement, that there would be an implementation review team formed, and that we'd go from there. So I don't know if that helps or not.
Okay, thanks very much, Barry. Okay, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, it is a policy versus implementation issue, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, when the 50-plus variants were added to the clearinghouse, there's a lot of community feedback saying that that language should be changed to reflect these are no longer exact trademarks. I'm not sure that actually was implemented, and so to promise another variant claims notice again, if it wasn't implemented last time, the confidence is low it would be implemented this time. So I don't think we can keep saying yes, and find out sensitivity is a bigger issue than all of us. Let's just keep saying yes and hope maybe this time we can trust them. The history tells us we're going to get burned.
Okay, thanks, Tom. I had Jordan and then John in the queue, and then Jonathan. Okay, that's fine. Jonathan, go ahead.
Yeah, Tom, look, I mean, I personally have a lot of sympathy with where you're coming from. I get it completely, but the challenge that I think we face is, for all of us collectively, is the perceived integrity of the policy development process, which is something we worked really hard to persuade the broader ICANN community and others that it works and does the right thing and does the right job. Now, the challenge for me is if we, at this stage, at the council level, not at the working group level, make these points the basis on which we vote these recommendations down, it's ugly. It doesn't look good at all. So our opportunity to make the modifications you suggest and propose, which I have personally great sympathy with, we should have done and should always do at the working group level. So that's the dilemma. I've got a lot of sympathy with you, but I've got a job as GNSO Council Chair to manage the integrity of the policy development process. And all of us have been extremely focused on new GTLDs. This is an extremely time-consuming issue that in many ways is a sideshow for most of us in our businesses. Yet, so it's a real challenge, and that's why I think the hat I'm wearing is much more defending the integrity and perceived integrity of the policy development process and the optics of this issue more generally in the community. So it's on that basis that I'm arguing rather than any lack of knowledge or sympathy or understanding for the points that you and John Berryhill and others are making.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. So Jordan, John, Volker.
Yeah. I mean, I mostly wanted to echo what Jonathan's saying. Over the last year or so, we've seen sort of incredibly important threats to the functioning of the bottom-up process, right? Like, we see staff going off and just sort of deciding that they can't wait for the community to decide things, so they're just going to do it themselves. And at the end of the day, given all the pressure that we put on them to get things done as well, there's no other reasonable thing for them to do if we don't have a functioning bottom-up policy development process. We have to show that the policy development process works. And just today in our meeting with the board, we said, hey, board, look, the PDP works. We have this IGO, INGO thing. This is what we're using to advertise the fact that we can get stuff done ourselves rather than having the staff just go off and decide whatever they're going to do and having Fadi set up strategy panels that are going to reshape ICANN. So if you care about the integrity of the... If the question is getting this exactly right on this particular policy question on the merits more important than having a win in terms of being able to show that the PDP works? And I think, for me, it's obvious to me that having something that we can use as an exemplar for the fact that we can get our act together as a community is way important, way more important than whether we can trust, you know, whether the exact implementation details are going to get right and which exact strings are going to get in here. Because at the end of the day, we're going to look back and say, the IGO-INGO thing was not a big deal for our businesses, but whether ICANN works or not is incredibly fundamentally important for all of us.
Okay, thanks, Jordan. So I've got John, Volker, Jeff, and Yoav.
I'm just at a loss to understand, then, having a GNSO council vote is not part of the process, is the way I would understand it. I mean, I don't understand if the process terminates in a GNSO council vote, and that's part of the process. I don't understand why there is this, you know, this compelling need for the GNSO just to rubber stamp things, because I would assume that in the overall design of the process, that is a safety valve for, as Jeff said, a working group that didn't have proper input, ran off the rails, whatever. I mean, you admit that the working group did not function correctly. And having a council vote, we either have a vote or we don't have a vote. If we don't have a vote, then let's just take that out of the process.
I think the working group worked amazing. The amount of participants in that group, there were like 40-something participants. They met once a week, every week for the past year. They've had 38 calls since the last ICANN meeting in Durban. I mean, just incredible amounts of work. The only part that didn't work, and I'm sorry to be a little blunt here, is that we didn't have representatives from the registrars. That's it, right? I think the process worked extremely well. I wasn't on the working group, right? But from what I observed as the council liaison to the group, it worked really, really, really well. And this is, other than the registrars not being there, which is not something the working group could have controlled, everything was done right. The council really is not a legislative body, shouldn't be a legislative body. It shouldn't substitute its view for the view of the working group. We all agreed upon that when we set up this model. We've argued that before in other motions in previous years from the non-contracted parties, and this has been consistent. For us to now just say no because we don't like it, and there were no problems in the working group. I just think, as Jordan said, that's part of the fundamental ICANN model. And I mean, the registries are going to vote yes, so the registrars can do what they want. I mean, we're not going to tell you what to do.
Thank you.
But our point is that probably think a little bit more about the ICANN model.
So thanks, Jeff. So, and, you know, obviously this is something we wanted to talk to you all about as the contracted party house, right? I mean, at least to kick this around. So I've got Volker, and then Jeff, and then Yoav. Hope I got that order right.
Yes, Volker Kleinmann speaking. I just wanted to support Jonathan and Jordan that politics of this are important. As registrars, we have, in a way, failed this working group by not participating in it actively. That is something that we have to live with. We have the option to look at the result of the working group, and as the working group was not able to come to consensus on something, on some parts of the issues that are dear at heart for many registrars, to evaluate these situations, but we should not block the motion in its entirety for something where we would have had the input to block it earlier on the council level. We need to participate more in working groups. That's maybe the consensus of what I'm trying to say. If we want to have a voice within ICANN, we should not use our vote in the council to block something that we do not like, and that we could have prevented in the working group. That's the wrong level. As the council, we need to show that we are efficient working within ICANN, upholding the process. That's our job.
Okay, thanks, Volker. So Jeff, then Yoav.
Thanks, and actually, Volker stole some of my thunder. I completely agree with him. From the registrars did not participate, and you know, shame on us for not going through. But I agree. I think that there are certain things to take stands on, and that might be, you know, that are crucially important. I think if everyone just takes a step back and look, is this more critical than the GNSO process, and that people have faith in it? I would rather go, you know, say, listen, it might not be perfect. It's okay. I personally think in the grand scheme of things, I think Jordan said it, we'll look back in a certain amount of time and be like, holy crap, we wasted all this time and effort on this issue, and it wasn't just my personal opinion. But that being said, I think that the process in general and having faith in the PDP and in the process is more important than I think the issues are at hand. And I think as far as taking stands, this is not one worth taking a stand over for it. And I think it's just sort of, you know, just lick our wounds for not helping out and just move on to the next one.
Okay, I've got, sorry, Volker. Okay, go ahead.
I think issues are worth taking a stand for, but in the right place, in the working group. If we want to take a stand on certain issues, then we need to participate in the working groups better and more and take a stand there. Taking the stand on the council level for an issue where we could have taken a stand at an early place but didn't, that's torpedoing the work of a working group, and that's not what the council should do.
Okay, thanks, Volker. Yoav, you're good?
Just one sentence. It looks to me that even if we've had someone in the working group, we would still be in a minority, and that would still be the position. So it doesn't look like, because it looks like it wouldn't change the result and would probably get to the same point and would need to decide whether we vote for it or not, but just my own opinion.
The main points that we are arguing about are the points that in the working group did not achieve consensus, but did achieve strong support with significant opposition, if I remember correctly. So had the registrars voted in the negative in the working group, then it would have been even less support and more opposition. Therefore, maybe the recommendations wouldn't even have turned out this way.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Volker. Thanks, Yoav. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Just real quick, I just want to agree with Jeff and Volker, and you know, I just think it sends the wrong message for us to, you know, not participate in the process and then at the end of the day vote it down. So I'd encourage us to stick with the plan that the registries have in place and support you guys in that. Thanks.
Okay, Tom, go ahead, and then we need to wrap this up.
We recently updated our bylaws and the registrar stakeholder group, so even if there were full involvement in this working group, the stakeholder group are entitled to instruct their councils on how to vote regardless of their input into the stakeholder group. So they basically have to come back to the group and ask us how we want to vote on these motions.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Tom. Any last thoughts on this before we move on? We're already over time. Matt, did you have anything else to add?
Well, I was just to be clear, I don't believe those bylaws that we passed in our stakeholder group are actually effective right now. I think there's still a question about the next steps and how we go about getting those approved, so finalized and in place.
Okay. Volker.
While that is true, as counselor, I would feel honor-bound that the policies that we have voted on should be followed, even if they're not quite implemented yet. However, as a councillor, cognizant of the duty of the council and our duty to the community, I would urge the constituency not to give us a vote that would substantially have the impact of damaging the ICANN process in the public view.
Okay, thanks, everybody. We are already 20 minutes past the scheduled end of the registrar stakeholder group meeting, but we also have our colleagues from IBM and Deloitte, I think, on the trademark clearinghouse here. So I would like to, for those that can stick around for another 10, 15, 20 minutes, take this opportunity to thank them for joining us and to engage in some dialogue, questions, any updates, anything like that. So if you all would like to come up, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, why don't we go ahead and get started before we lose any more folks out of the room. So I guess what I would offer is the floor to you all to give any sort of brief update or remarks or anything that you think is relevant or meaningful in terms of new information, and then we can open it up for a dialogue.
We will do that. Sorry. So first of all, thank you very much for inviting us here. We have a couple of representatives from Deloitte, myself, Jan Korstens, Vicky Follens from Deloitte, and then we have Francis Werquin and Wim from IBM. I'd like to mainly have this more of an open session with questions, if you have them. I can spend a couple minutes in sharing some information. There is, I think, not that much new information, and we obviously will have a session tomorrow where we can share more statistics, and we will actually do that. So thanks for inviting us anyhow. It's been a great journey up till now, a long journey with a lot of changes, the plus 50 and all of the implementation that we had to do around that. But I think we're definitely at a situation right now where everything that was required is been implemented, which is a slightly different story with the last time when we presented in your session. We have around 17,000 trademarks in the database right now. Those 17,000 represent just around 30,000 labels. As you know, that there are certain trademarks with special characters that could result in multiple labels, and there are quite a number of trademarks that have spaces in them, and that's why those create quite some labels. On the IDN side, we still see a slow uptake, but we've definitely been working hard in the last 2 months to also promote in those regions, especially in China. We're now having a couple agents that are very active and that are wanting to promote. We're having our first events in Japan. Next week we will be in Japan. And we're finally starting to get some traction in the Middle East. We will be at INTA in Dubai in December. But we're still struggling finding local agents that are willing to represent the clearinghouse. But based on my information, some of the registries are also having difficulties finding local registrars. So it's I think it's more of a regional problem than only our problem. For some reason, and we'll try to explain it in more detail tomorrow, there still seems to be some confusion on the pricing. Obviously, there is a pricing on our side, on the Deloitte side, and there is a pricing on the IBM side. The $150 or below is on the Deloitte side, is on the front end of the trademark clearinghouse, which is for the trademark agents and holders. The $5,000 is the registry fee, which is on the trademark database side, which is owned by ICANN and operated by IBM. We will definitely go in a little more detail about, IBM will go in a little more detail on the pricing model tomorrow, but if there are any questions, I'm sure that they can also answer them now. We have around 165 clearinghouse agents, so there are still agents extra. It was a little bit slow a couple weeks ago, but in the last 2-3 weeks we've had around, I think, 10-15 agents extra. Definitely I think also there are quite a number of agents that are willing to invest in getting some things up and running. We're starting to work a lot with those agents to promote the trademark clearinghouse, to help them promote the trademark clearinghouse, but we're also starting to work a lot with the registries, and we're also have been having a lot of discussions this week in some launch programs that we would like to assist in. Vicky, do you want to say some things about that? Yeah. So perhaps there are a couple of registries activities that we have started up this week or that we discussed with them. Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea is because First of all, in the beginning, when we started the early bird sunrise, before any sunrise was happening and we had open registration, we said that it could take up to 20 days to register or to verify a trademark record and another 5 days or 14 days for proof of use. Please note that we've already changed that to a turnaround about 7 days now. And in, we are looking at into the fact is definitely for some registries, it's interesting to have them, I mean, if the sunrise is ending, that they would be kind of have a fast-track process. So when trademark holders would want to at least register with the Trademark Clearinghouse for that benefit of that registry or TLD, that they would be processed more quickly than the other ones. But we are already currently already changing, turning around on 7 days, and we're ramping up as well as we go, because the number is going up as well from our side.
So we're definitely interested in understanding from the registries how they will shape their sunrise so that we can see how we need to organize ourselves to react swiftly to their demands and make sure that we can also help you have a good sunrise. We have a central page currently on the clearinghouse, where you can actually, if you provide us the information, you can upload all the information regarding your TLD, but obviously especially around your sunrise. I'm having the URL here at sunrise.clearinghouse.org, and then it jumps to the page on our website. We also have been approached by a number of TLDs, especially GeoTLDs, which presented their launch program, and it seems that they're thinking of having quite a number of different periods in there. We're trying to grasp also what's coming our way there. On the other hand, there are also registrars that came to us and that... That we're looking for information around that because they also need to change their systems to be able to adapt that. Some of them were complaining about that, but anyhow, I think that we can definitely, in this story, also be a catalysator of bringing info streams together so that both parties know what is coming their way. I had one more point, I think. Yeah.
So, as Jan explained, so we have adjusted our website to have the information of the launches of the sunrise. We also will have a page where the registries can put their information on there if you want. Yeah. Secondly, for those of you that are interested, we do want to invite you to participate in our webinars to our trademark holders and agents so that you can also market your TLD before the actual launch of any sunrise, but at least there's awareness being created that people know what's going on. So we do invite the registries for that.
Bottom line, I think we're here to help you, to work with you. A lot of you have come to our booth, asked for a meeting, and we've had a lot of productive discussions already this week. For the ones who haven't, feel free to contact us and see how we can help you with promotion, with organizing sunrises to the extent that it's possible. Voila, that's a little bit the message that we had. Do you want to add something?
Maybe one more question, remark from IBM. So we would also be interested to receive some feedback if currently the information provided on how to get connected, how you can set it up, what kind of testing you have to do, how the testing certificate has to be obtained. On one hand, we see still quite a lot of questions, especially this week we received quite a few questions on this. On the other hand, we have seen that the participation in the webinars, which we have been organizing, is really slowing down. So any feedback that you want to provide on how you would prefer to receive the information or how we should make it available would also be very useful for us, so we can make sure that everyone is knowledgeable about the different processes to follow. Obviously, we will also come back to some extent on that during the presentation tomorrow afternoon. Thank you.
Are there still any questions?
Okay, thank you all very much. Appreciate the update. Any questions? Comments, inquiries for Trademark Clearinghouse colleagues? No one?
Okay, then I think our slightly extended... Volker wants to say something.
Switching my head from a registrar to a trademark agent at the moment, we found that the current practice of only allowing one update to any database entry to be very disadvantageous for us as agents. And we would like to encourage the Trademark Clearinghouse to allow at least one further update to take into account spelling errors, mistakes by customers, even if such updates would be paid for. This would be preferential to having to enter an entire new entry request.
Yeah, point taken. I think we're still trying to work as much as we can in helping you get correct records in. But I think in some instances we've just seen that some people or some parties have really difficulties getting in correct things. And I'm not talking about one or two times, but five, six reiterations on the same record. And I think that's why we gave the message, like, we're only going to do it once. Mm-hmm. If there is really an issue on a record or something, I think that if it's on an exceptional basis, we will do our best to help you. But we also, I can tell you, of the 165, I mean, on the agent side, that's still quite okay. On the holder side, it is sometimes really dramatic. It is, the errors and the type of errors are so basic that you sometimes wonder whether they even read what they put in there. So...
Maybe just one further addition. One case, I'm not quite certain of the details, but just as to illustrate my point, that has been described to me by our processors was that the customer had, when copying the data into the necessary fields that then caused the upload to the Trademark Clearinghouse, ignored page break, and therefore the data, goods and services categories were not quite exactly as the goods and service categories in the trademark register. Therefore, it was denied. We had to enter that again. And then later, the customer came with a certification of use that he needs for a trademark sunrise registration, and that was not possible anymore because the one update attempt had already been used for the update of the error. That clearly is a very problematic position and for the trademark holder because now he holds an entry that he cannot use for a sunrise process. Therefore, I would like to see a modification to the rules that further updates are possible, even though that may cost additional fees.
Yeah, we'll definitely take a look at that. But did you file a request at the customer support for those specific cases? Because normally, I mean, our customer support, they really try to help out as much as can. And we pulled the trademark record and the proof of use also separate. So even if your trademark record is verified, you can still add proof of use at a later time and all. So we've done a lot of modifications the last couple of 2 months to really focus on making the process even more smooth.
The process, the case that I was talking about happened last week, and the only response we got for a request for further upload of the case of use information was to file a dispute.
Well, then we'll look into it.
Okay, thanks. Any last questions then? I guess we can wrap it up. And thank you all very much for participating and for your patience and waiting for us to get started. So thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Next Registrar Stakeholder Group meeting will be held in Singapore, where we'll all probably be sweating like pigs. See you all then.
Haven't we been there before? Wouldn't that not be kind of deja vu?
Yeah, we have.
Yes, as long as the air conditioning works, it won't be too bad. But for those of us who smoke, the going outside for a cigarette is painful.
And ICANN didn't have an office there last time.
So are you offering tours of your offices, Tim?
I'd have to see them first, but sure.
Thank you.